Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. Hey, I'm Shauna Compton-Game. This is Millennial Money, and today we're talking with music artist Jesse Dayton.
All right. Well, Daddy was a badass, Oldfield white trash, never took nobody's lip. He was a honky-tonk dancer and even beat cancer in 40 years smoking.
Jesse Dayton has lived an eclectic, Forrest Gump-esque life, and many times set those experiences to music. Whether he's working on a new record, writing music for a soundtrack, or directing a zombie movie, this Texas-born talent pours in all his charisma and charm into any project. Jesse's newest album, The Revealer, is a rich blend of Americana music narrative mixed with a full head of toe-tapping steam of rockin' mojo. Enjoy our chat with singer, songwriter, and director Jesse Dayton, as we talk about his new album, being speechless in front of Johnny Cash, as I would probably be, and the genius that is Rob Zombie.
I mean, Atlanta is, you know, such an amazing melting pot. There's so much kind of funky blues stuff that came out of this area, the South. There's a big history for it, you know?
Right, exactly. exactly. So last we spoke, you had a new album. You're kicking off a tour and supporting that. Tell us about that album and how's it done so far since you released it?
Man, the record's doing great. We've been, you know, it's selling really good. It's doing, you know, it's got on a lot of the year-end list. And it was, you know, it's kind of just out in a way. I mean, I think it's been, what, 3 months?
Yeah.
And so we still feel like we're working it, but we did. It's doing really good, man. We got thrown in the Best Americana pre-Grammy votes. We made it into the whatever it is, about 300 of those guys,
right.
I think, and
right.
didn't make the cut. But that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And you know, the record's getting a ton of airplay. Our big saving grace has been this Sirius XM. Outlaw Country Station.
Yeah.
And that has really changed a lot because they play my stuff like every day. And I remember, you know, when they first really started playing it, like, I mean, they've always played it for about the past 2 years. We've been doing really good with that station and really selling tickets because of it, which is kind of cool. I'll call my agent and go, hey man, you sure this place isn't too big? And you know, what are the pre-sales like? Right. And he'll go, no, pre-sales are good. And I'll go to the merch booth and hang out with people and sign stuff. And almost every one of them says, man, we listen to you every day on XM Sirius Outlaw Country.
Yeah. I think not only that station, but I think a lot of that XM stations have really taken off for a lot of alternative artists and other artists too and stuff like that. It's a good breaking ground too.
It really is. I mean, for, you know, regardless of the genre, I like it because it's so, you know, it's starting to cut into the pie. People are starting to get, more in the niche stuff and things that they can't find. And that, plus you don't have to listen to, you know, truck and beer commercials every, you know, 8 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I have it in my car. Exactly. So tell us the name of the album and tell us a little bit of the stories of, on the album as well.
Well, the record is called The Revealer and I got that from, I was looking at these old gospel slave hymns, and they had a song called The Revealer. And I love that concept. And, you know, I was raised in Deep East Texas, and, you know, I have met a lot of characters there. A lot of the records about kind of my survivor's guilt to getting out of that and all the people that I met that were, you know, just people that really don't see anymore. Some of the people that, you know, raised me, my uncles, and I had a old Creole African-American woman named Miss Victoria who lived with our family and helped raise me. And a lot of that, she kind of turned me on to, you know, East Texas blues stuff and Lightnin' Hopkins and gospel music and Mahalia Jackson and so it's got all those kind of things in it.
Mm, right. How else did she influence your musical background too?
Well, I mean, you know, when I got to school, I was a little funkier than a lot of little white boys because I had been listening to like, you know, Mance Liscombe and all these kind of East Texas country blues guitar players. And I think, you know, all over Louisiana and East Texas, especially South Cajun country, Louisiana, those records were real popular. So it kind of gives the record kind of a colloquial thing where you're like, wow, this is from a place. This is from somewhere. And she influenced me a lot, man. I mean, she influenced me. I went out in March the other day with about 100,000 other people in Atlanta. And I thought, you know, she was there with me the whole time, man.
Right. I saw that on your social media the other day. It was a good day for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, and it's, you know, it's there's a lot of reasons to be marching right now.
Right.
So it's and Atlanta has a great history of marching, so it was kind of cool to be here, mm-hmm. be around that, and. you know, we marched right past the MLK thing, the exhibit downtown, museum, right. rather. So, you know, it was awesome. But, yeah, a lot of that stuff, you know, she had an influence on me. My dad, my uncles, my grandfather, all those old country guys, you know. I mean, I could point out Merle Haggard. That's Merle Haggard, and that's Johnny Cash, and that's Willie Nelson when I was about 4 years old. And you know, and then what's weird is I went on to play with those guys, mm-hmm. and you know, I got to play guitar on a Waylon record, and mm-hmm. got to record with Cash and Willie and a lot of those guys, and you know, you can tell people immediately go, well, that's a colloquial thing. You were raised with that. And it's kind of what makes me different than, because I grew up on all the same rock and roll stuff everybody else did on the radio. But unlike a kid, say, in, you know, Des Moines, I could go see Johnny Paycheck sold out in my hometown on Sunday night pretty much once a month. Mm-hmm.
But then what else influenced you growing up, like as a teenager and stuff like that? What other music?
Well, I mean, I was totally into rock and roll stuff. Yeah. You know, my older brother's music. You know, I was into ZZ Top and, you know, the Allman Brothers. By the way, Butch Trucks passed away today, the drummer for the Allmans.
I saw that.
Yeah, and then probably about junior in high school, I went over to my buddy John Cook's house, and he had a record by a band called The Clash, and that just, you know, that changed the whole thing. I was like, oh, that's my brother's music. This is my music.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And I got into, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff after that. You know? I mean, we were going to see punk rock shows in Houston and Austin, and it was such an exciting time in Austin then when I was that young, because there was kind of this kind of punk rockabilly cowpunk thing that was really big, and you know, it's the whole thing is just kind of. It's been an organic development every year. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right. Well, even though they play you on Outlaw Country, what do you kind of not label yourself, but what do you describe yourself as?
Man, you know, it's a hard thing. You know, I mean, because I sing like a country guy, and I play guitar to do different guitar stuff, and I got a lot of blues, and a lot of people call it Americana. I call it Jesse Dayton music, you know.
Right, right.
I'm trying to, like, because I don't want to be the flag, you know, bearer or you know, waving a banner for any genre. Mm-hmm. I want to do what's honest for me, and you know, make a hybrid of all the cool stuff that I grew up listening to, mm-hmm. you know? Cause I think that's the most honest thing, you know? I mean, people call it outlaw country. I'm fixing to do this outlaw cruise mm-hmm. with Lucinda Williams and Steve Earle and the Mavericks and all that. And, you know, I've never heard any of those guys say I'm outlaw country.
Right, exactly. Hey, exactly. Exactly.
You know, whatever people want to call it, it's cool with me.
Right.
You know?
It's a good way to have a bunch of eclectic kind of sound, but you know, everyone's so individual too.
It is. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of music out there, but there's still only, you know, a percentage of it that gets heard, and the stuff that gets heard, you know, then you cut down to another percentage of, you know, is this a real song? Is this songwriting? Is whatever. But I'm into all kinds of music, man. I like, you know, I listen to everything. And, you know, the reason why I talk and I mean, sing and play the way I do is because that's kind of the way I talk and who I am. You right. know what I mean?
Right.
I had a guy in San Francisco come up to me at the merch booth and go, dude, is that really your accent? And, you know, immediately when they do that, you have to reassure them that you're not banging your sister, you know, who's in the KKK, you know, you've read Wuthering Heights 3 times, you're a romantic, it's okay, man.
Right. That's when you want to practice your English accent and say, oh, no, it's actually not.
That would blow their mind.
Right, exactly.
Of course, there's not anything worse than a guy from Beaumont doing a Cockney accent.
Exactly. You're known as a guitar guru, if you will. And when did you pick up the guitar, and how did you get into playing guitar?
Man, I went, I had always played music, had a drum set, I took piano lessons, and my dad was going on some business trip in Boulder, Colorado, and I knew that my older brother was going to stay home. He was a senior, and I was like a freshman. I knew he was going to stay home and just have these raging parties at our house while my parents were gone. And I was doing everything I could to stay home and not, you know, my mom's like, oh, it's Colorado, you'll love it. You know, of course, I mean, we'd been there 8 times, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so anyway, finally the old man puts his foot down. He said, you're too young, you have to come with us. So I was bummed. I went with my parents to Boulder, and I met this African American guy named Granville Cleveland, who was this amazing guitar player, and he played with a bunch of people. He knew Johnny Winter, who was from my hometown, and he couldn't believe that Johnny and Edgar grew up, you know, a few blocks from me. And he started showing me how to play guitar at the pool at the hotel in Boulder, and I was like 15, and I just could play. I just, like, you know, I had to work at it, but I mean, I could play a song, 3-chord song, pretty much right after he showed me. And I was like, okay, yeah, he's like, man, you should stick with it. So I got home from that and got a guitar, and 6 months later, I had, quit all sports and bought a guitar and was playing in a band for girls at a party in a little country town.
Wow.
And I was like, this is way better than that fat redneck coach yelling at me.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, one of my favorite stories you told me before was when you were a young guitar player, you played for the old school guys, Waylon Jennings, you met Kris Kristofferson, and then you met the legend Johnny Cash. Tell me a little bit about that story.
Well, I had I was playing this show at the Continental Club in Austin, and George Strait, the big country singer, came out and saw me and said, hey, man, what do you think about doing this tour, opening up the Strait tour? You'll be the first band of the day. We'll get you a bus, the whole thing. So I was just giddy. And while I was out there, I met this woman named Evelyn Shriver, who's a publicist in Nashville, and I think she ran MCA Records. But she got me on a TV show with Kris, and it was this kind of, you know, very kind of square country interview show called Crook and Chase.
Okay, yeah, I know that show.
And, and so I had a song, and then there was these other two Nashville acts that, you know, were totally pop country, different than me, and then Kris went on, and then me and Kris comes over to me, he's like, man, I really like what you did, and we ended up hanging out in the back of this car behind the Opry TV station, mm-hmm. and we burned one, uh-huh. and ended up going to the Gibson Guitar Factory that night, which they opened up at like 11 at night, mm. And I thought, man, this is the greatest night I'll ever have. I'm going to get on the plane in the morning, go back to Austin. I was on TV, you know, maybe some of my my country relatives at the next family reunion will,
right,
you know, not think I'm such a weirdo because I was on the country music television. But the next morning I woke up and Waylon Jennings called me and said, called me at my hotel and said, "Hey, Hoss, I cut my hand cooking with Jesse last night, and we were watching you and Chris on that TV show, and do you want to come down to Woodland Studios and play on a few songs?" So I was like, yeah, I do. Just stunned. My mouth was on
right,
the floor.
Sure, totally.
So, like, I hang up the phone. I look at the phone for, like, about a minute straight. Like, did that really happen? Right, and right. Blow off the plane. I go to Woodland Studios, knock on the door, and Johnny Cash opens the door and says, "Are you going to stand there with your mouth open, or are you going to come in and play guitar? We've been waiting for you."
Right.
So we go in, and what's cool is almost all of this first day was filmed. They had a film crew there. So if your listeners go to YouTube and put in Jesse Dayton, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, there's a bunch of footage of me, and I look super young. And, you know, I don't know shit from bean dip, man. I'm just, like, just trying to play cool stuff and keep my mouth shut, coach. Right. Glad to be on the team.
right.
And we ended up hanging out, and then Waylon called me back, and I went back in and played on his record, and played all the guitar on this record called Right for the Time. And then that led to, you know, working with a lot of people. And, you know, I think you know, it was just crazy. It was one of those meant to be kind of things that you don't, you know, you don't see it coming.
Right. Well, one of your other friends that you've been working with and that you got into film, making films, working with Rob Zombie. Tell me about how you got into working with films and how it is working with Rob Zombie.
Well, Rob's, you know, I mean, I don't use this term genius very much. I mean, people throw it around a lot, but, you know, Rob has created, like, his own parallel universe. I mean, it's unbelievable. And his crowds now at his shows are bigger than they were when he had hit songs on the radio, which is crazy. But, you know, I was playing around Austin, and I hadn't put out a record in about 2 years, and I was just burned out from the road. And I got a call from him saying, well, a good friend of mine that I grew up with is a guy named Lou Temple. And Lou Temple is an actor. And if you look up, if your fans look up him, listeners look up him, they'll see, they'll go, "Oh, yeah, I know that guy." Mm-hmm. He's like a character actor. Mm-hmm. He's in the top 5% working character actors in SAG. Mm-hmm. And so he lives now. He lives, I think he bought a house in L.A. Now, but he's there full time. But he played the part of Roy Banjo in The Devil's Rejects, and he's the one who told Rob about me. And Rob was like, Rob called me up and said, "Hey, man, we're making the ultimate white trash horror movie, and I think your music would be great. We're going to make a fake record." And I was like, "What do you mean a fake record?" And he's like, "It's going to be a record that we're going to have the band in the movie make, and it's going to be like on the, it's going to be the soundtrack for the record, and we're going to do it as like a lost record that we found after they were murdered." And so it was crazy, you know, it was crazy. So, you know, and, you know, Universal gave us a budget, and we put the record out, and it did really well. And it was the soundtrack to The Devil's Rejects. And we sold a lot to his fans, which I love the thing that you know, I don't think those guys had ever had a rock star direct a movie before.
Right.
Because I don't think the studios realized that, hey, this is when DVDs were still selling. I don't think they realized that, like, you know, if he sold 10 million records, he's probably going to you know, a lot of sell a lot of DVDs. So he did really well, and with that movie. And then I ended up doing this Halloween 2 movie with him, and I was in that, mm-hmm. and I did a soundtrack for that as well. And that was awesome because he put me as this psychobilly murderer, like band leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just stuff that you think about, like when you're a kid and you're watching Elvira, Mistress of the Dark on right. Saturday night. Like, one day I'm going to be in one of these.
Right.
and the film did really well. And I ended up doing some more stuff, you know, and I ended up actually going on tour as the band from that movie with Rob, right. which was crazy.
Right.
And we went out and played, I think we had like 40 minutes a night, and we would go out and do all the songs from the movie, mm-hmm. and the crowd knew the movie. So it was awesome.
Right.
They were like, oh my God, this is where that music's from. It's yeah. these guys.
Right.
And I wrote all the songs, so that ended up doing well too. And I did some songs for an animated film, and you know he you know helped me direct some videos for it. And some of the videos went viral, and it was a big boost to my career because it kind of got me into that whole thing.
Right.
You know, then I ended up doing a little bee creature feature movie that I wrote and directed, right. and with Malcolm McDowell. And we
Zombex, right?
And we sold it. Right. It was crazy. Everyone's like, "You sold it!" Like that was the biggest deal of yeah. the whole thing. Not writing it, not making it, right. not you know, selling your soul to the devil right. for the money to make it. They were like, "You sold it!"
Right.
So.
Right.
It was good, man. And so I've been real fortunate. I've got to do a bunch of different stuff. You know, I'm doing some TV stuff now and it's fun. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there right now, you know, a lot of different outlets now in this, crazy Netflix world we live in.
Exactly. Are you planning on directing some TV then coming up or?
No, I'm doing some music,
okay.
And then I'm supposed to go to, after we do these tours, I'm supposed to go to Canada and act in this film. I did this little film out of Austin called Two Step, and it did really good, man. The director and writer's name's Alex Johnson. He just signed a deal with Paramount to do his next movie. But I play... I know this is going to shock you, but I play a white trash biker in it, named Bobby.
Bobby.
Bobby. And I was like, we were laughing. There's no way you can not say Bobby. Once you say it like that right. one time,
exactly.
you're damned.
Exactly.
So that kind of helped, you know, get some other stuff going and the Rob thing I'll tell you, man, acting's it's a lot more fun than running the whole show.
Right.
You just show up and do your deal and maybe hang out in the trailer and play guitar and leave.
Right. Well, you seem like you're a performer, especially if you're doing music or acting or whatever you're doing. You seem like you're always comfortable in your own skin, and that comes across in anything you do. Why is that, you think?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I've always been a kind of enamored. I've always liked show business, and I know that sounds kind of showy and you know, not the most soulful thing to say. But I've always been a total movie geek. I mean, I watch more movies, and you know, I read, and I'm a real student of. You know, just performing in general. I got to do some theater, and that really changed my life. And, you know, for me, just being the best version of you when you act is kind of the whole kicker on the deal. You know,
right.
I don't really, you know, most of my favorite actors are still the same guys in every role. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same thing with playing guitar, you know, and singing. Like, you go up there and you do what you do, and, you know, it's not even a matter of keeping your blinders on anymore. You just kind of, it's kind of like putting your, you know, hanging your ass out the window and pulling your pants down and going, hey, everybody, hope you dig this.
Right.
The worst thing that's going to happen is you'll fail miserably. Yeah, I think that, you know, after you spend a lot of time on different stages and, you know, and it's just kind of that Malcolm, what's that guy's name? He wrote The Outlier. It's that 10,000 hours thing. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. Keep you, the more you keep doing it, the better you become.
Yeah, you know, you become less inhibited.
And, right.
You know, you just want to do what's best for whatever you're working on, you know, and you know, I've always been about that. I could care less where the idea comes from. Let's do the best one, you know?
Right.
And, I think that, you know, when I was younger, I got signed to a major label, and I lived out in California for a couple of years and had a nice house in LA and I really enjoyed it. I got a lot of friends. I'm actually pretty defensive of people when they say negative things about Los Angeles, 'cause I love it so much.
Yeah.
You know, being out there, it's amazing all the organic relationships that I just had because we were hanging out at the whiskey bar or we were hanging out, whatever. And I remember that person was a personal assistant. And now she's running the company.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
And I think, you know, I always tell, you know, these guys that I work with, you know, if they call me, they're like, hey man, this guy wants my song for this show. Or I'm like, get a lawyer, dude. It's the best money you ever spent in your life.
Right.
But I learned all that stuff when I was out there, and I made all these great friendships that, you know, some of them are work relationships and some of them are both and some of them are not. You know, they can sense that, hey, if we get this guy, he is going to be comfortable in his own skin. He's going to show up and this is what we're getting him for.
Right. So where can we find your website, your new album and your tour dates?
Well, The Revealer is the new record and it's doing really good on the Americana charts. We're going to be entering top 10 hopefully pretty soon. And you just go to jessedayton.com or you can go to the label that distributes my label, which is this Blue Elan Records, BLUEELAN records.com. Or you can just download it. Mm. You know, you can go to iTunes and just download the new Revealer record and, you know, never a dull moment. It's a good record.
Sweet potatoes cooking in the kitchen on Sunday after church. She's humming along with the gospel station on the radio while she works. And through the house you could hear that voice to the front porch swing. You could hear choke up when the preacher mentioned Martin Luther King. It was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful thing.